Mindy Pack. What's up? Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. You know, this has been a long time coming. I've been doing these podcasts for about a year, but I know how busy you are. But nevertheless, you always answer my texts, and you've been a great resource, mentor, and colleague and friend to me over the years, and you've helped me out a lot. And so I'm so glad that my audience finally gets to pick your brain and to ask all the questions regarding vocal health and to learn something from you in terms of, you know, how to prepare an artist for tour, to learn more about injury risk prevention. And so I'm so happy to have you here. So Mindy, welcome.
Thank you. No, I love it. I think this is fun, and hopefully there's a little nugget of knowledge that goes out. So
well, I'm sure there will, right? No pressure, but I'm sure there will be. You've worked with some of the top names in the music industry today. You wear many hats. Your journey in the world of voice has covered many avenues: performer, voice teacher, vocal coach, clinical vocologist, registered massage therapist, and now founder and CEO of The Voice Straw. Can you tell us how you got started and how you're able to manage having to wear so many hats?
Yeah, it's been a journey, that's for sure. So, you know, I think the thing that is unique about it was that I was a performer. So from a personal, very intimate, I mean, from a young age, like I knew I always wanted to be on stage and be a part of that. And so the training and everything that I did allowed me to not only develop my own gift, but also experience what it's like to actually be on stage and those demands and like working and trying to navigate that between the artist and then also with my own coaches of how to keep that demand going. And so I never actually wanted to be a voice coach. Like I always wanted to be a performer or some sort of doctor, you know, a surgeon of some type, but I didn't want to go to medical school. So that kind of panned out differently. But, you know, it wasn't until I was working in a performing arts studio and somebody just said, you'd be a great coach. Have you thought about teaching privately? And I was like, nope. And then I'd like, well, let's try it. Let's do it. And then that just kind of started on a journey into a career that I really loved. And from there, it was just evolution and figuring out what tools I had in my toolbox and where I needed to fill in on certain things and where's a gap. And, you know, my whole philosophy is the minute I stop learning is the minute I stop teaching. And so it's just kind of evolved into a lot of hats, you know, that I use because I never wanted to be limitless in what I could do for a client. Like I wanted to be able to pull out anything based on what their needs were.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what it would look like to prepare an artist for tour as well as injury risk prevention for those tours?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, you have to look at the client as what are the client's needs and what is that demand? Because how I would work with, you know, someone, you know, who, like, for example, like Lumineers is a client that I work with, they're not very physical on stage, but they have high energy on stage. And then you work with somebody like Lil Nas X, who it was, you know, what we just accomplished was his first tour ever, him really singing live on a tour. And his show is incredibly physical with choreography. So how we work with him is they're just complete ends of the spectrum, essentially. And so you have to understand who you're working with, what the demands are, what that expectation is, and then cultivate a customized plan for that artist. And it's not an agenda. And I think that's where a lot of people get into a really bad cycle, is because coaches will go in and be like, it has to be this way, or it has to be this technique, or it has to be that, and it won't work. Like you have to come out with a customized plan for the uniqueness of that artist and what the capacity is for the tour. So injury prevention is, you know, like a lot of times when we first start, we'll do a whole vocal assessment. I get with my doctors, the medical team. I actually make them go in for a scope so we can see a beforehand on what we're dealing with as far as tissue health and structure and all of that. And then we just start a customized vocal plan based on where their music is, range, sustainability. First and foremost, I'll get that going vocally before we start adding in any sort of cardio or movement with it. And it needs to be ahead of time. Like a lot of times artists will just be like, okay, I have tour prep happening this week, so I better start voice lessons. And I've been really keying on with management to be like, no, this is like a vocally, we need to get, you know, 3-4 months in prior to tour rehearsal, so that when we add tour rehearsal with the wardrobe and the physicality and the things, that the voice is the last thing that the artist is worried, you know, worried about. Like the voice is already functioning, so then we can add these other components in on it. And once management and the artist understands that, then it's a lot easier as far as everything else.
It's an incredible journey to prepare for tour, isn't it? Like it's not just, you know, a few weeks before they start their rehearsals. It's several months before. And like you said, it's both the vocal aspect and the physical aspect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we did when, you know, I was lucky enough to be brought in on the Man of the Woods tour with Timberlake. My partner, Rob Stevenson, is his main coach. He was out with another artist, and I was able to come in and like sub in for a little bit. And with the physicality of his choreography with his dancing, I think and I don't want to misquote it, but I think he was around 13 miles per show that he was moving. Wow. So it's not even like the physicality, but then you're looking at the hydration, the nutrients, the vocal stuff. I mean, there's just so much that comes into it at that level that people really don't think about. They think it's just like, you're a voice, you're a singer, you can get up and do that. And there's just so much more behind the scenes, which is why a coach is really important, because it's just more than the voice working. Like you have to look at all these other avenues.
I had the most amazing time at the Man of the Woods concert way back in 2019.
Yeah, you came with me.
Because I got to see you work, and you were fine tooth combing through his music as Justin Timberlake was singing. You were there with your iPad, making sure that every note was on point. And then you're like, see you later, I gotta go cool him down. And you know, I just thought it was so fascinating to see you work like that. Can you tell us a little bit about what your work would look like in the context of a show?
Yeah, so I mean, it kind of depends on what we're doing, but if we're doing a general, I mean, I guess for most shows it would be like this, but you know, after the prep work, like a day of, we typically, you know, the artist, you get them up, you get their body moving, you get everything to wake up. I typically like to do a mini warm up in the hotel prior to going to the arena, if we have that option, because outside of just the show, we have press, we have meet and greet, they have model shoots, they have interviews, they have a ton of stuff that happens prior. So it's just getting the voice up and working and just kind of seeing what we're dealing with that day. When we get to the arena, we do a basic warm up prior to sound check. At sound check, and again, this all depends on the artist and what they want. Some artists want to be critiqued and fixed and like go through. Other artists just want the stamp of approval, like, yeah, you're good, let's go. So we just kind of, I always ask, like, what are we doing today? Like, do you want me to fine tooth comb it, or are you just feeling good and we want to sail through it? But I'm always in my mind fixing. So whether or not the artist knows that, whatever happens in sound check will dictate what I do in their warm up prior to show. But yeah, so we'll do sound check. And a lot of times I'll be like, okay, these three songs from the last show, or these three songs are your hardest songs, let's sound check that this time so we can kind of see how that execution is. And then from there, after sound check, we'll do break, we'll, you know, catering, whatever, dinner. I leave the artist alone. When we're ready to do the warm up, we'll do another warm up. And based on how sound check went, we may change how the warm up goes on patterns and vowels and consonants. And then again, based on the artist, I'll be like, hey, like, I know we have a 2-hour set. And a lot of times people are like, give me all the, like, as coaches, we're like trying to help this whole thing, but I'll never go through every song in the set. I'll be like, okay, these are our three songs we're going to pick today, 'cause that's the success. And so when they're on stage and we have it, there's three songs that we're like kind of working at that may be an issue. And there may not be, like maybe things are like flying really well. We don't have to stress about it, but we'll always set a target in the show while the artist is going. I have show choir choreography where we have cues with the artist. So if they're squeezing too tight or if they're working too hard, if their adrenaline's too high, there's cues that I can give from the audience, which is why I have an iPad, because I'll flash it up. So
wow, it
will grab the artist's attention because everybody has their camera with a flash, but I'll throw the iPad up. So people go to the audience, don't do that. That's my thing.
But oh my gosh.
I can grab attention, and we have like literal choreography that I can give cues in the audience to give feedback.
Yeah.
And then after that, after the show, we'll go and we'll do a cool down, a really important cool down. And that can be vocal, that can be the laryngeal massage stuff that we do based on that. And sometimes it turns into a full body massage to go through, and other tricks that we have with that I take with us on tour for do a whole body cool down until the next day. So.
Wow. And you know, that tour schedule tends to be gruesome, right? Day after day, like there's not really a lot of breaks in between.
No. Yeah. So, I mean, typically it depends, like festival season and all of that. Like my favorite setup is 2 days on, 1 day off. Like I hate the four in a row because that's just a lot, but just based on strategy and where it's at, you know? So a lot of times, like once management and schedule and the artist is on board, like I've been really lucky to get into the trust component with people where I can help set up that tour schedule a little bit and be like, yeah, that's not going to work. Like you have to give some break, or, you know, you can't do press this day and stuff like that, just because I'm advocating for the artist, and nobody wants to cancel a show because yeah. of, you know, fatigue or being down, and nobody wants the artist to get injured. And so, you know, a lot of times outside of the artist, and even the artist sometimes doesn't understand the wear and tear that can happen. And so I'm just there to help advocate to make sure that the artists can have the success that they need in order to keep, you know, doing what they love.
Speaking of canceling shows, this happens a lot in the music industry. And I'm wondering if you can give us a bit more insight as to what would happen for an artist to have to cancel a show. And is this something that is becoming less common or more common?
I mean, that's a good question. I think it's going to come down uniquely to the artist. You know, if the artist is like super sick and not like in coughing and choking, you know, like in there, like, so a sickness would come in, and that would be something where the doctor and the artist would make the call on that, just to make sure it's there, which is why it's important to have a medical team on your staff, and really important to have the pre-scope prior to going out. Because if your doctor, say, is in LA or Vancouver or whatever, we have a baseline to go on. So if you're feeling something, say in New York, we have an area of connection and seeing before and afters to be able to make that decision on like, yeah, we have to do this or not do this. So the doctor on the team, I think, is the one that will usually make that call with management, with the artist going out. So I would say any health concern is probably, excuse me, number one. You know, it also lifestyle comes into play too. So if the artist is out, you know, having fun the night before and everything else, and, you know, maybe came back and can't function, then that's another component that goes into it. And hopefully that's not the case. I mean, when you're on tour, you're pretty regimented on things, but you're still human, and it just kind of depends on what's going on. So.
Talking about lifestyle, I've sat in on some webinars with you and Dr. Gupta. You talk a lot about vocal health and prioritizing vocal health for performers. And one of the many things that comes up is whether or not smoking is a thing and whether or not it affects the voice. And I know it's a very controversial subject, but I wanted to get your thoughts on smoking and vaping.
Well, anything that you inhale is passing your vocal cords. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is, if it's natural, if it's not, it's passing the vocal cords. So for me, that's like a number one no-no. Like, do not do it. If you need the vape, if you need the hit to try and figure out other ways of getting it besides the inhalation part, because the stiffness, the drying, we already know like edema that happens because of the nicotine and the hot heat I mean, that's undisputable. Like, there's science, there's proof of that. And when your cords start getting that edema and that swelling and that thickening up, you just have to work a lot harder. And sometimes you get dysphonic sounds, and it's really hard to reverse that. So for me, singing is one of the, or for smoking, anything is one that is the worst thing you can do for a singer. And so that's one thing where with any artist I work with, I try and like just lay that down. Now, if they are doing that and that is something that they do, then as a coach and with the help of the medical team, we try and figure out other ways to help maybe counter those effects so that it's not as, you know, troubling. But ultimately it comes down to the artist. And, you know, you just have to have a real conversation. Like, is this your goal? Is this your career? Is this what you want? Then it's not worth it. Like, it truly is not worth it. So we've got to figure out something else and just have the realness that I don't care if you're 22, if you want to do this when you're 30, it will catch up to you. And so let's just start setting this up as a boundary right now.
Would you say there's more awareness about vocal health and vocal hygiene in today's industry versus, let's say, you know, 20 years ago?
For sure. I mean, when I went to school, I never even took a vocal health class. I didn't even know what the vocal cords looked like. Like, everybody just hears the forbidden or like, oh, I got nodes, or like something that like goes on with it. And yeah, you like have to like deal with it. And now I think because, you know, education is power, power is knowledge, that the more we have that to help make educated decisions, you know, that's, you know, based individually, that will help it. So yeah, I think it's way more prominent of a discussion. And I think the discussion needs to happen more often.
I saw a video clip of Freddie Mercury talking about how he had no prior training. And while he was, I mean, the world, he was a goat.
Yeah, like.
But the reason I'm bringing it up is because in today's world, I feel like there's a change. I feel like artists are now talking about having training and having a vocal coach. Do you feel like there's been a shift in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a stigma around it a little bit. You know, like artists want to get in there and they're like, I don't want to change my vibe. I don't want to change my sound, you know, like going through. Yeah. And I think that in some ways that they have a valid reason, which is why I always tell coaches, you cannot have an agenda. That fingerprint or that style is what is getting them the job. You just have to help figure out how they can keep that sound, but execute it healthy.
Yes.
And so I think that's just, it's a conversation that coaches need to have within coaches. Because, you know, we tend to want to, as a coach, we want to fix things. And sometimes it doesn't need to be fixed. It just needs to be balanced. And so, you know, I think it's just going along with the dialogue of a coach is necessary because you want an advocate in there, especially when something will happen, because it will happen. None of us are invincible. Like, we're all dealing with human tissue, human flesh. We're putting demand on it, the vocal athlete, you know, comparison. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a bigger conversation. And a lot of times it's funny because like some artists won't talk about their coach. They don't want to talk about their coach because they don't want other artists to get to their coach. And so they're like secret about it because they don't want to share.
I love that. How do you yourself define the term vocal athlete?
Vocal athlete to me is anybody that has a high voice demand. And so like I consider school teachers a vocal athlete because they're talking nonstop in a lot of different prosodies or like ranges and dynamics. You know, you got to think for a minute, you know, you hear the term A440. Well, when somebody plays the A, the vocal cords come together 440 times a second. When you have somebody that say, you know, like a Timberlake, and I actually did this because I'm a nerd. So, and I told him, and I've talked about it in other things, but when I was on tour, it can get kind of redundant, you know, like day after day after day after day. And so I went through and took every one of his songs and recorded with his front of house person. They would send me the raw audio. And so I went through and tracked every single note that he sung in a show and then charted it against the hertz. So I knew how many collisions we were having just in a 90-minute set. And we were like in the tens of millions of these collisions. And so if we're not having that hit in an effective, balanced way, you can see how an issue would happen later. It's just like a marathon runner. You know, you marathon, and if something happens, you're going to start compensating. So I think anybody that's a high voice user that's having a lot of demand is a vocal athlete. Voice coach is like demonstrating all day, not demonstrating, demonstrating wrong, not demonstrating wrong, you know? So yeah, I think a heavy voice demand user would be a vocal athlete.
I've always said it takes a village, and I've collaborated with you many times, consulting with you for clients that are preparing for tour. And, you know, I think it's really wonderful that vocal coaches consult with each other and can send each other clients if need be, especially when it comes to things like laryngeal massage. You've had the opportunity to collaborate with many coaches, and I just wanted to sort of get your take on that collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a village, you know, like you said, that goes through there, and the team of people who you trust to give you information. You know, I didn't start working with these high profile people until I actually met my partner, Rob Stevenson, and we realized we were like yin to yang, and was like a really good fit. And he's kind of who got me started, really kind of open up to the collaboration idea and like how the industry works, and like was really kind of a mentor that kind of pushed me in there. And yeah, I think it is important. It is important to go through there. I've collaborated with you. I've collaborated with other coaches. I collaborate with my current coach still all the time on things. But like Rob was really the one that kind of got me in. Obviously, I mentioned with Justin, you know, because he was unavailable, Brandy Carlisle, and a few others. And just because of that, I was able to see the industry firsthand, see the high profile thing. And we just kind of really build up an amazing team, which has then led me to help other coaches like yourself to bring into like what it's really like. Cause I think coaches have an idea of what it's like, but until you're really in it, you really don't know what it's like. And so it's nice to have people that you can trust and rely on that's there for the artist and not the ego. And that's one thing that is another soapbox of mine, is that there can be no ego in this.
Yeah, check your egos at the door, right?
100%, because the minute you have an ego is the minute you're out.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's a really important point. I think we have to really understand that we're there to serve. You going into preparing artists for tour is no joke. It's totally different than our day-to-day teaching.
100%, and it's a lot of waiting. It's a lot of strategizing. It's a lot of like, how do you set your set list up? I mean, there's so much that goes into it. You know, like I said before, from working with the choreographer, the stylist, the costume, the wardrobe. Like, I remember I was like freaking out on one artist because we got the wardrobe and the pants weighed 40 pounds, just the pants. And I'm like, this is ridiculous, like going out of here. And so like really building up the time to be able to do that, because only doing 4 days to add all of this component is not going to work. And the other thing I want to bring back to with like the collaboration of other coaches that you trust, it's important because you can't teach everyone. And when you get to a certain point and you're working at this level, you start getting phone calls for other people, or management wants to send other artists to you and everything else. And at some point you can't see everyone. And so it's really important to have those coaches that you trust, that understand this process, that are team players, you know, that can go through, and you know, that will help represent you well by going out in there. And, you know, Rob was definitely one of that, definitely one of them. You know, there's a few others I can name that like can go in there, that our goals and our vision and our egos and everything all matches. And that's what's important.
Yeah, we're all fam jam. 100%. it's a small world too. Like we all totally. Know. One time I had a client in the same city as you, and I was like, he needs a laryngeal massage. And you know, you were on it, and you even went to his show. You were so supportive. So yeah.
I sent you notes from the show that I was like, hey, when you see him tomorrow to warm him up, check this out.
And it was amazing. And it made me work harder, right? Like just understanding what was required that next step. So I love that you highlighted, you know, checking your ego at the door, making sure that you're in there for the right reasons, because sometimes, you know, that can really be a thing.
It is a thing. It's not a thing. It is a thing. And that's just where it is. Like, It's about the artist, not about you. And, you know, when you have pure intentions of just being there to help and uplift and build them.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And people ask me, they're like, do you miss performing? And I'm like, not, I mean, in certain aspects, yes, because it's so fun stepping on that stage. But every time an artist takes the stage, I still feel like I am performing because I had one very small impact into what they're doing on stage that provides, you know, enjoyment and love for the mass, you know, that I've never been in there. So there's one little snippet of my performing heart that's like, I'm still part of it.
I love that. I feel that too. Speaking of technique, how important do you think vocal technique is when it comes to what an artist needs to do on stage?
I mean, I think it's really important. You know, like, we don't want to necessarily change the style, but the artists that I work with, I always say we need to have a home base. You need to come back to home, and that's the foundation, so that they can go out and experience and play and get the tones, textures, timbres that they're needing to create their fingerprint. And so I always bring it bare back, bare bones. Like, it's all about, okay, can I get you low to high without any squeeze, strain, cracking, flipping, so that we're getting that in balance. And then say your style is a yodel. Like, I remember working with Brandi Carlile, you know, like, her style is very folky and like she flips and yodels a lot. And so I'm like, let's just make sure the yodel is the right way, you know, like here, you know, and we kind of worked that on one of the songs and it was awesome. And so it's just making sure that their style is being executed in a right way versus not having it be compensated. So for me, technique is always going to be the foundation, and that's always going to kind of be my core balance going through there.
So artists don't need to really fear technique per se.
No, I think the thing that's been an issue in the past is that, and you and I know this well enough to know, in the world of classical versus contemporary, it depends on who your artist is. If your artist is a classical opera singer, the mechanics of how you train that is very different than how you train a contemporary singer. And so if artists or singers are working with someone who is strictly doing classical technique, is there benefit in that? Absolutely. But is that the most effective for what they're trying to do in their sound? Probably not. And so really making sure that the coach you're working with for the technique is meeting what your goals are and really understanding the genre and style of music that you're performing. And like right now, like, I mean, when I was training, I didn't have the ability to do online sessions with someone. Like, I was limited to my geographic area on who I could be with. And now with the way the world is, like, artists have the ability to really honestly study with anybody in the world, you know, that really kind of fits what that style is. And so I'm all about really making sure the artist, client, up and coming singer, the novice, whoever, finding the right fit with their coach to make sure that they can meet those same goals.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like technique is becoming more of a necessity, especially with high demands. Would you say like that there's more demands on today's artists than there's ever been before?
I think the demand is like really crazy. And this expectation that even some of the fans give them is really high, you know, like on certain things. And I think the way some of the current music that's written is really demanding. You know, a lot of the, like, you look at all the new contemporary musical theater scores that are written for men particularly, and it's like, holy Jesus, you better have a first tenor that can wail for every single musical that's like coming out that's written right now. You know, like, the demand on that's like insane. And so you want to make sure that your voice is incredibly healthy so that you can fit these roles that not only, you know, I think Dyrevin Hansen, for example, that score is incredibly difficult to sing and it's incredibly emotional from the acting components. You got to make sure that vocally and technically you can get into that pocket so that you can have a believable performance. Same thing with pop music that's out, you know, like you look at Charlie Puth stuff, you look at all these other things where they are really high, and just keeping that health and going through is, I think, mandatory.
Yeah. You know, and without that, the singer might face obstacles. And in your opinion, what is the biggest obstacle that a recording artist and performer might face in today's world?
A lot of time, I think it's just the demand that's put on them. Like when you look at a schedule of certain things, if you have an artist who's like, okay, stack my day, you know, like I remember we were up at 4 a.m. and he was going straight through till probably 3 a.m. the next day, nonstop. And about 10 o'clock at night, I'm like, are you okay? And he hadn't eaten all day just because of the demand. So I think the demand is like one of the biggest obstacles that are in there, because a lot of times it's like, okay, we have this, so we got to do X, Y, and Z and get it done. So demand would be one for me. And the other obstacle would be, I think just honestly sleep. I think finding the time to make sure there's a downtime, you know, to like make sure it's like, no, you're going to bed, let's go. Especially on the road, sleep is like a big deal, because you know, for, you know, people are like, they don't realize what happens behind the scenes. You know, a behind the scenes day is like you report into the arena at 3, you typically don't leave till 2 or 3 a.m, but you're coming off stage, and so you have this like downtime, and then you get to the next city around 6 or 7 a.m. and you're like, okay, do I sleep for 3 hours or do I stay up? And then you can get off the bus and then try and get in the hotel to go and sleep for a few hours before you have to report back to the arena. But for the artist, sometimes it's like, no, you have a 10 a.m. meeting, an 11 a.m. meeting, a 12 a.m., like 12 p.m. and they like book out their mornings to go through there. So sleep, I think, is absolutely crucial.
The voice needs rest, right? Mm-hmm. Like to be able to recalibrate for the next day to meet the demands of what's required of them the next show, right?
Yeah. So. Well, they're human. I think people forget that.
Yeah.
Like, I think some people just think like all of a sudden it turns into the artist is a machine, an artist is a brand, which is true. They're a brand, but they're also human. And they have to have some downtime and some reflection time and like go through there. And that's something that, you know, fortunately for me, the people that I work with, they've been very aware of that. And we've had many conversations about it. And it's been really respectful and that. So like, I'm very lucky, but I know on the other side, it's not necessarily as lucky, but I'm also loud about it. So I don't sit in the corner.
Yeah, because you're advocating for the artist's vocal health, but also for their ability to perform.
Yeah, I mean, there's been times and people like, there's a code word that I have with each one of my artists where they'll send me a text and it's just one code word. And I know that I need to go into that dressing room and kick everybody out for them. Like the excuse of like, you need some downtime and we need to warm up, so get out. And I'll kick everybody out. And so like, cause the artist can't be the one that does it, cause they don't want to look like the jerk, like kicking everybody else out. And so I'm like, I'll be the jerk, that's fine. And so then they'll send me a text and I'll like knock on the door. Security knows I'm coming in. And I'll be like, all right, it's time to warm up. I need everybody out. And they're like, we can stay. And I'm like, no, I need to do some stuff that's private with them, body work wise or whatever. Like I'll just make up some random excuse and get everybody out so that they have that downtime.
Let's talk about the voice draw. It has been life-changing for many voice users. But for someone who doesn't know what the voice draw kit is, can you tell us a little bit about what it is and what we can learn from it and how we can use it?
Yeah, so the voice draw is a vocal training tool made for voice users. And a lot of people are like, it's a straw, it's a gimmick. And it's really not. It's backed by over 20 years of science. And when I went, you know, I never had anything like this. Like, why is the voice the only instrument, you know, out there that doesn't have tools that like help it, essentially? And so when I went to school to do this vocology program, I was really lucky to be able to become really good friends with Dr. Ingo Tietze and his daughter, Karen Cox. And, you know, and Ingo is one of the leading voice scientists in the world and has done all of these, you know, experiments, whatever. But when I was in the lab, like I was part of the schooling is we did all this lab work and we were doing this this lab on pressure equalization. And I thought for sure, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing ever. This is a gimmick. Like I'm gonna woo through a straw. Like. But when you started seeing the layers of like what it does and how my voice reacted to it, and you started like seeing the, you know, it sounds just isn't sound. Like there's mathematical equation to it with pressure and air and all of this stuff that I was like, this needs to be something that everybody needs. And there's been hundreds of videos about like, singing through a coffee straw, whatever. But what is in addition to that is a coffee straw isn't a one size fits all situation because your voice is different, the thickness of your cords is different, and it changes based on what your demand is. And so I developed a kit that comes with different sizes, different diameters, so it can be interchanging for the singer on how to use it. And then the other component is, you know, the straw works the source, it works the vocal cords. Essentially, what we're doing is we're regulating the air pressure so that the pressure comes back into your throat, so it makes the vocal cords come into a perfect alignment so that you don't have to work as hard to voice. So we're getting that squaring up, that perfect posturing, and we're building up all this really great energy. So again, you don't have to work as hard as what we need. So the straw, we can get the source in, but when we add the cup with it, straw cup combo, we're able to voice, we're able to sing, we're able to yell, and it's helping train that muscle memory, that system of getting into the correct posturing. So you can get to the music faster, you can train faster, and you can put, you know, avoid injury or fatigue because we're getting the source set up in its perfect balance.
Wow, and I've seen people use it online, and I myself have been using it with my clients for the past 2 years, and it also comes with cups. Can you tell us a tiny bit about what it would look like to use the cup and straw combo?
Yeah, so obviously the straw works the source, so we're just working the vocal cords. When you put the straw inside of this cup combination, you're still getting the benefit of what the straw does by keeping the air pressure regulated and the posturing. But by creating this type seal with the cup and straw, you're able to sing, voice, everything by getting the benefit. You're able to create dynamics, you're able to belt, you're able to get into all these things so that you're training your body and your system how to do that without overengaging or adding extra tension when you don't need to.
It is so effective. I highly recommend it. Can you tell us how we can go about finding it? What the handle is for the voice straw?
Yeah, well, I hopefully your link will be in the description. Click in the link on the description page. But if you went to voicestraw.com, there's a bunch of how-to videos, a ton of resources that are on there, as well as our like YouTube channel and things like that. There's some really great visuals that we've had medically animated so
Yeah.
that you can see what that looks like, with what the back pressure and coming in. So it's a great visual so that you can, the visual will represent what the feeling is when you're using it.
I love the visuals because I'm super nerdy, and it just like it also gives me reassurance to know what it's doing. It actually is working. I mean, a lot of people don't realize how effective it is.
Yeah, one of my favorite things I love doing is in the recording studio. So like when people are, you know, like we're used to Melodyne and Auto-Tune, and like if we see the sound wave go out in what we're recording, and you can see where it peaks, and then your engineer has to compress it and tune it to make it work. What we're doing is we're training it so that you don't have to use Melodyne or Auto-Tune because we're getting the voice in the right way. So you can see the natural compression kind of coming in, and there's another visual cue when it's in motion. So all of my students, even my voiceover people who are doing exertions and that, the straw and cup combination is in the recording studio with them. And it's been funny because some of the touring artists that I have, their producers will call me and they're like, they forgot it again. Can you just send me some so I can have them in the closet? Because I don't want to deal with the temper tantrum of not having one here.
I love
It's
that.
like I've started sending them to like the producers where they have like a little cubby to like slide it in. Have it there for them because it makes engineering a lot easier.
It is instant results in squaring up and getting the right balance of air and muscle ratio. And I have clients that do performances. They take the kit backstage with them and they're using it before they go on stage, but also after. Can you tell us a little bit about what a cool down would look like with the straw?
Yeah, so a cool down shouldn't be very long, you know, like it's not a timed thing. And as far as like, depending on what I have to do or how much time we have, Honestly, I just start using the straw that's appropriate to their size, you know, because again, it's not just a coffee straw. Some people need two coffee straws, some need a bigger straw, whatever. I'll typically do a cool down in water with a straw, depending on what's there. And I'll always start longer scale patterns and go into shorter scale patterns so that we're, because, you know, it's opposite of a warm up. Warm up, you're starting, you know, typically shorter scale patterns into the full stretch. You go out, you do your event, you're on fire essentially going in there. And so then we'll start longer scale patterns and bring the voice back to home base.
I also feel like it helps to calm the nervous system down after being on stage.
100%. Yep. And there's like physical movement too that we'll do with it to calm the nervous system. Like if we're trying to get rid of it, the voice massage helps. And then I have a medical device that's called the Beamer that I use in a cool down setting that helps kind of flush everything out so that we can get everything going.
Could you give us a bit of insight as to what laryngeal massage is and manual therapy?
Such a hot topic right now. That's
I know.
it's like fun. Yes, for me, the manual therapy for me is kind of a game changer in there because we can get the voice to work in the right way, things to relax, go through. When I was on tour, I realized that in working with the massage therapist that was also on tour with us, how much the full body connection is very important, which is why I went back to school to do the structural full body stuff. Laryngeal massage, yeah, I mean, it's just like, again, it's just like making sure the larynx is moving in the right way, muscles are nice and relaxed, you're stretching, everything's open, jaw, tongue. It scares me. Like, it scares me that there's a lot of coaches going to a 1 or 2 day workshop to learn this and then putting their hands on people. You know, A, coaches don't have licenses to touch, so you're like in this incredible liability situation. And there are certain states that don't regulate it. There was one time when I had a 911 call from an artist I've never even worked with, but they went and got a laryngeal massage from somebody who did a 2 day training, and it threw their whole neck into a spasm, and they were going to cancel the arena show that night because the artist literally could not talk after the session. And so we jumped online and like tried to get them to do a few things, and we were able to get it to unlock and work and get on stage. But with the craze that's going on and people trying to do it, and there's a mentality, I think, among coaches that are like, I can do anything and I need to keep doing it without being credentialed or really learning what the muscles are because of how much is happening in the neck. My caution for coaches would be, don't touch your client and like find somebody that can do it or further your education so you're properly credentialed. And for artists looking at it, like do your research with management and make sure that this person is qualified and credentialed to touch your neck. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, you know, it's your instrument, and you have to make sure that you're working with somebody that has a background in that and is qualified. You can't just go to anyone,
Yeah,
you
I
know.
mean, I had a coach call me randomly who I'd maybe met once through a conference, and they're like, "Can you walk me through how to do this? I need to do it on a client." And I'm all, "No, I cannot. Like, I'm not taking that responsibility with you." You know, because, you know, we're as voice coaches, unless you're really into anatomy, you really only learn about maybe four main muscles. You learn the strats, you learn the SEMs, like you learn, you know, maybe a few of these in here. But in actuality, there's a lot of nerves, main nerves, your vagus nerve. Like you have a lot of stuff, arteries in that, I mean, it's directly coming from your brain. So if you don't know really how to navigate that, do not touch their neck.
Yes, great advice. Mindy, I gotta say, thank you so much for this interview. It has been the highlight of my year. I was super nervous.
Need higher aspirations, girl. Come on.
It means so much because, you know, I highly respect your work and you've been such a great mentor to me. So, where can people find you?
Just my name, Mindy Pack, right there, mindypack.com, Mindy Pack on Instagram.
And the voice straw.
Yeah, Voice Draw on Instagram. There's just a lot of information, and I love connecting with people, and I love education. I mean, you know that about me. Like, I love I feel like that's kind of my purpose, not only like working and what I do, but I really feel like community and education. And, you know, I've done a lot of work, so I love to share it. So I'm glad you asked me. It was super fun.